Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bad night last night for the Nationals. They lost the first of four games against Colorado. Chelsea Janes joined me yesterday on my podcast. I'm going to play some of that for you coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes, talking about the Dave Martinez situation in particular. Right now, we are talking football team. Washington, for the first time, has a quarterback situation that does not require a lot of debate, a lot of consternation, a lot of angst, a lot of what ifs, a lot of I want another solution discussion. We don't have to talk about the quarterback. We understand that Washington, for the first time in many, many years, three plus decades, has a legitimate upper tier elite level NFL starting quarterback. All these years of talking about the Sam Howells and the Carson Wentzes and the Taylor Heinickes and the Ryan Fitzpatricks and the Dwayne Haskins and the Case Keenums and the Kirk Cousins and et cetera, Alex Smiths. I mean, the list goes on and on. Beck versus Grossman. That was a year, huh? 2011. We don't have to have that conversation anymore. That's always been at the top of the list, you know, other than owner-related topics. But the quarterback conversation's always been at the top of the list. It isn't this year for the first time in forever. So what is at the top of the list? What's the most important Washington football team conversation we should be having? 301-230-0980. I think the most, you know, I don't know if it's the most intriguing, but I think it's the biggest question mark. Defense. They've got to be better on defense if they're going to actually compete to make a Super Bowl this year. They are talked about as Super Bowl contenders, but we know what they were on defense last year. We know that they relied on their quarterback to carry them to 12 regular season wins and 2 wins on the road in the postseason. Can he do that again with a less than average defense and a very poor run-stopping defense? Would seem to be harder based on the schedule, based on, you know, they got breaks that went their way last year in a lot of those games. That, to me, heading into the season, it's about how do they get to a Super Bowl? They get to a Super Bowl by being a much improved team defensively next year, because I have no doubt that offensively they're going to be very difficult to check in year two. Ryland, go ahead. What's the most important conversation you should be having?
Morning, buddy.
Hey, what's up?
How relaxing is this, eh? What a treat. Oh, nothing, buddy. Just hanging in there. What a treat it is to have number 5 as a skin or a commander. He's the man. I would say the biggest conversation we need to be having is what about the weapons around our guy, number 5? Because without Terry and with a fatter Deebo Samuel, per se, will he have enough without those guys at their peak? And I think maybe we need to add to the running back room. Maybe I just saw a Breece Hall possibility. I don't know if that's a thing that we can make happen there.
Where did you see that? What did you see about Breece Hall?
You know, rather than working hard on my spreadsheets, I'm sitting here scrolling through Twitter or X, and I just saw something that popped up saying that he might be unhappy or something like that. So maybe we should make a phone call there, see what AP can make. But on the defensive side, I think with like a Kinlaw and a Lattimore, we got to wait and see, like you mentioned there, until the season's a go and see what those guys bring to the table. Because as you mentioned, we didn't make too many big name splashes other than those guys. So those guys need to be performing. Another random thing I want to see, I'm just waiting for that uniform tweak, Kev. As a Canadian, I mean, I die hard Redskins fan. I can't even believe the Commanders are still the name, but I just give us a spear, give us something that kind of ties into the past, because I mean, hail to the Commanders ain't nothing, but, you know, here we are.
Yeah, no, I know. That's always going to be, you know, part of the backdrop, part of the conversation with a lot of us, understood. I'm looking for Breece Hall stuff. You know, there are still players out there, and we've talked about some of these players, you know, thinking in terms of edge rushers. Za'Darius Smith hasn't signed with anybody. Now that we're post OTAs, mini camps, where a lot of those veteran players would prefer to sign after those things take place. Jadeveon Clowney, Von Miller, Preston Smith, you know, some of those guys are still out there. Breece Hall, I think, is a talent, no doubt. That would be a phenomenal fit, I believe, in Washington. I haven't really seen it. I'm reading now that there's the possibility they'll look to move on from him, but that's a trade. You know, he's not a free agent. Let's go to, thanks, Ryland. Appreciate it. Let's go to Steve in Columbia. Steve, since quarterback isn't the conversation as it's always been, what is the number one conversation related to the football team?
Hey, what's up, Kevin? And thank goodness we don't have to talk about that quarterback thing again, at least. But I'm a little concerned about linebacker because I think it's a demanding position. And as Wagner gets older, I mean, obviously he's going to slow down. He knows where to be and what to do. And I just don't like the depth currently there. But I do. They're high on that guy, Matt McGee, or whatever his name is.
Yeah,
hopefully he comes through. And then the other area I'm a little concerned about is actually the offensive line up the middle, because that's where they got killed, in my view, last year, right up the middle. And I know, you know, we have some new additions. Hopefully they will, you know, be good enough to stop that from happening. And then I'm a little also worried about, like, the depth behind Terry. If something happened to him, who would actually step up at this point at receiver?
You got a lot of things that replace the quarterback conversation. You know, to the offensive line, they really struggled when Tyler Biotish got hurt and got sick, remember, for a game. That New Orleans game, Jaden got sacked eight times. Eight times in the New Orleans game without Biotish in the game. I think it was Michael Dieter who started at center that day. Look, they've improved their offensive line by adding Laramie Tunsil. Clearly, Josh Connerly, we hope, is also a significant, you know, upgrade to what they've had. They need Cosme back, and they need him back sooner rather than later and healthy. There's no doubt they are moving away from Allegretti. You know, Coleman's going to take his spot. Who will start at right guard before Cosme comes back? Probably Allegretti, I'm guessing. That will be one of those things we'll watch to see what that offensive line looks like. You know, maybe Connerly's not ready to go opening day. He is a rookie, and Andrew Wiley ends up being the starting right tackle. You know, or they split snaps like they were doing with Coleman last year until he's comfortable in being the full-time right tackle. Let's go to Lap. Lap, what's the big story? What's the top story about this football team since it's not quarterback for the first time in decades? God, he just talks. Yeah, go ahead, Lap.
I'm going to say offensive. Yes, sir. Yeah, I'm going to say offensive line. I'm going to say running back as well as receiver. I want to see if the receiver. Yeah, I want to see if the receiver, who steps up. And that Noah Brown thing is kind of concerning me. So I guess we'll see. Maybe Luke Kuechly step up. And then edge rusher, man. I want to see if we're going to get some pressure on the quarterback. On the defensive side.
You're doing the same thing our previous caller did. You don't have a number one conversation. You got a lot of, you know, topics. And by the way, that's good. We're talking about, you know, the situation that's being built around a superstar quarterback. And there are a lot of, you know, all of these areas that you just touched on. It does speak to the fact that we're not, you know, overly confident about the rest of the roster, you know, outside of a guy like Terry, outside of a guy like Tunsil, you know, or a guy like, I think, Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner. But, you know, there's a lot to, you know, learn about what the 2025 team and supporting cast around Jaden's going to look like. I think the good news, Lap, is we have some good players and we've got some good coaching, especially on offense.
Yeah, definitely. Let me ask you this, Kevin. If
Yep.
Do you think this team is better than they were a year ago, just on paper right now? Do you think Jaden has what he needs to succeed? And do you think this team can make the playoffs, you know, again? Do you think they're a better team? Because we didn't really have much, and he did a lot with less. So I'm curious to see build around him the right way. I'm really want to see. I'm excited for the season. I can't wait, man.
Me neither. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I can't wait for real games and to talk about real games. Look, going into this season, obviously this is a better team than we thought it was last year, because we know we now have an answer on the quarterback. Now, with respect to everybody else, I think it's better, because I think the offensive line, certainly on paper, adding Tunsil makes it a much better offensive line. You've added a truly high-level, borderline, elite pass-blocking left tackle. It's a very important position in the game. I think Debo is he's got to prove it, but in a contract year, I like that as an added weapon offensively. They need Terry, no doubt about that. Defensively, I think corner looks like a better room than it did this time last year, and they're bigger up front, but I don't know how that really plays out production-wise. I don't know how that will manifest itself. I mean, there are a lot of those, topics. To me, again, after understanding quarterback is not a conversation, they have to, big picture, Washington ends up in the Super Bowl. How did that happen? Well, we had another incredible year offensively, and they got much better defensively. That last part, getting better defensively, is crucial to the upcoming season. Michael, what's the number one conversation, since it's not quarterback, heading into 2025?
Hey, how you doing, Kevin? It's the running backs. I think we need an elite running back, someone who can give us 1,500 yards. The same thing to put Philly over the top. When Philly got Saquon, that put them over the top to win the Super Bowl. Derrick Henry went to the Ravens. That gave Lamar his best season ever, statistically. I think an elite back will take a lot of pressure off Jaden, and it would make us an elite offense, man. If somebody's getting 1,300 yards a season, that does it for me, man. I can rest easy knowing that we have an elite back. And that's somebody who's getting, coming in there getting 700, 800 yards. That's not going to do it. We need someone who's an elite running back. I'll take an elite running back over receiver at this point right now. Thanks, Kevin.
You know, that was a conversation we had before the offseason began. You know, do you want another – if they only add one true dynamic playmaker to the offense, do you want it to be a running back or a wide receiver? Look, they added Debo. I think at his best, if he's healthy, if he's available, he is a dynamic playmaker. He's going to help. I'm with you, though. I've wanted something else at running back. The idea of having something that resembles a top-tier back standing next to Jaden in the backfield would be that's an offense that's difficult, really difficult to stop. And it was difficult to stop without it last year. But they don't have that, as far as we know, this year. But maybe the offensive line upgrade, if it ends up being an upgrade, and it would appear that it would be, maybe that reveals the running back room to be much better than we think it is right now. You know, or maybe a guy like Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. A lot of you have a lot of faith in what he is. I'll believe it when I see it in an actual game. But imagine they found a back like an Isaiah Pacheco they found in the seventh round, the Chiefs did, and he ends up being the answer. And he's dynamic, and he's explosive, and he's versatile. That'd be incredible. Because can you imagine what it would look like? Forget Barkley. How about if you just had Bijan Robinson in the backfield? How about if you had Jahmyr Gibbs in the backfield? How about if you just had somebody like Josh Jacobs or Kyron Williams? You know, maybe not top tier, but that second tier, you know, of backs. And I certainly think that Brian Robinson Jr. is capable of being a good back, but not an elite level back. What if he had Jonathan Taylor in the backfield? You know, the guy that Carolina ended up paying last year midway through the season, he was having a great season. A guy like Chuba Hubbard, you know, a guy like Bucky Irving, who Tampa found. I mean, You know, I like the guy in Cincinnati, Chase Brown, who I think they found in the fourth or fifth round. He ended up getting hurt. But I loved him coming out of Illinois. He turned into a really good back. Imagine, though, somebody like that in the backfield. Jason in Laurel. Jason, go ahead.
Hey, Kev. Thanks for taking the show. Glad you made a good recovery there. So my number one story for this season still sort of contains Jaden, but kind of on the outside looking in. What I think is the most important story to me is the relationship between Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury. And I tell you what, I disagree with you. I don't think this is his last year. I think he's going to stay around, and I hope hopefully longer than shorter. These two guys really get along. Both of them have incredible work ethics. You know, Kingsbury was drafted by New England while Brady was there, so he's seen what Brady's like in the room. I think he sees some of that in J.D. 5. You know, the work ethic that Murray had, I think maybe soured him enough that he took a step away from the NFL for a year and kind of like, hey, what am I going to do? I think he's found the guy in J.D. 5 that is kind of wired the same way he's wired. You know, it's all about work, yeah, all about studying and putting the work in. And they seem to get along. Steve Kingsbury himself has said, you're going to have to drag me away from this guy. I'm going to be here for a while.
Right.
I also think he gets along well with Quinn. And you know something? I've heard you mention this many times, that the team needs somebody that sort of knows the history. This organization has had a habit of letting really high-quality coaches escape them. And I think it stops now, Kevin. I think we keep Cliff long-term. I think the relationship continues to burn. And I don't know if they hit him with an assistant head coach title or they promise him the team with DQs done. I mean, I don't know any of that. But I don't think he's going anywhere else because I think he's comfortable and I think he knows Jaden knows his worth and he knows Jaden's worth. And I think the team responds to him. So that's my number one story. Love to hear your comments on it.
Yeah, I think a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, who is a competitor and probably – you know, and I read from that story that this guy Tyler Dunn wrote last week about Cliff Kingsbury that, you know, he got this label of being a bit too Hollywood, being a little, you know, too much of just, you know, a coordinator, not a head coach, et cetera. I think this guy's a phenomenal communicator. Players seem to love him. You know, the combination of a really strong offensive head coach and a really good quarterback, I think that's what he would be looking for. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, a situation where, you know, I'm trying to think, you know, let's just say New Orleans ends up with the number – well, New Orleans just changed their coaches. But, you know, you get a team next year that ends up landing on Arch Manning or, you know, a big-time quarterback and they're looking for a new head coach. There could be a situation that's just too tantalizing for him to walk away from as a competitor. And I think these guys always would, you know – I don't think they dream of being a lifelong offensive coordinator. I think right now it's been very easy for him to stay here because, A, he's got an incredible, you know, quarterback to work with, and, B, remember, he's getting paid like a head coach. Arizona's still paying him, you know, as a head coach. I think – I forget, doesn't it go through 27 or 26? I think there might be two more years of him getting paid like a head coach. I'll go look that up because that's important. You know, he may not speak to that, but the fact that he's not making offensive coordinator money, but he's making head coach money, kind of makes it easy to stick around and be a coordinator as well. He is still being paid by the Cardinals through 2027 as a head coach. They had that three-year, $18 million contract with Washington to be the offensive coordinator, but basically the Cardinals are then paying the difference between what he signed that contract extension for in Arizona in 2022 through the 2027 season. So there is that. All right. Good conversation. Chelsea James joined me yesterday on my podcast to talk about the Dave Martinez situation. And these next three games against Colorado may be a determining factor in whether or not he's the manager by the end of the week. You'll hear that conversation next. Kevin Sheehan Show. The Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This was a tough one, you know. Again, you know, another game we lost, you know, by a couple of runs. But we got to keep battling, got to keep going. I mean, we got to stay positive, come back tomorrow and do it again tomorrow.
Dave Martinez last night, following the Nats' 6-4 loss to the woeful Colorado Rockies. They had a 4-3 lead going into the ninth. Kyle Finnegan, who had not given up a home run in his first 25 appearances this year, gave up 2 home runs in the ninth. Can't make this up right now. The Nats are losers of 9 in a row. And, of course, what happened over the weekend with Dave Martinez after they had lost to the Marlins on Saturday, saying, you know, being asked about sort of the production, the offensive production specifically, and he said, it's never on coaching. It's never the coaches. That got a lot of attention, of course. And this 4-game stretch against Colorado, the worst team that Major League Baseball has seen in many years, at least through this point in the season. What could be coming if they lose 3 out of 4? They've already lost the first of 4. I had Chelsea Janes, who's covered the Nats and covered Major League Baseball for years in this town for the Washington Post, on my podcast yesterday. This was before the game last night, but some interesting stuff from Chelsea in talking about the Dave Martinez situation. Joining me right now, Chelsea Janes, longtime reporter for the Washington Post, covered the team forever. She now is the paper's national baseball reporter, at Chelsea_Janes on X on Twitter. You heard what Davey said on Saturday, and you've just written about it in the Post. You'll get to read that online if you're a Post subscriber today, in the paper tomorrow, I'm sure. Where did it stem from, do you think? Was it just frustration in the moment after losing a 7th straight game, or do you think that there is some concern about job security?
Yeah, I think it was largely frustration, but I also think there is a little bit of tension here with, you know, his option on his deal needs to be picked up in July for him to be under contract next year, and, you know, July is coming quickly and results are not, you know, improving. So I think it's a bunch of things. Obviously, you know, you can't speak for him, but I do think there's a lot of frustration there, because I think, like all of us, he's watching these guys do the same stuff over again and kind of wondering, like, what do I have to do to get you to understand that we have to change things?
What was the reaction in the clubhouse? And then, if you know, from Mike Rizzo and ownership?
You know, I wasn't in the clubhouse the day after, but my colleagues who were said that they noticed a lot more front office presence in the clubhouse Sunday morning than normal. Mike Rizzo's not normally in there, certainly not kind of openly talking to players, but he was down there, and so were some other front office folks, just kind of having conversations that we don't usually see. So what that means, I don't know. You know, maybe they got a new coffee machine, but I doubt it. I think it's probably related, and just kind of hearing from people around the team, it sounds like, you know, Riz went in there to kind of, you know, clean things up, whatever that means, just to everybody's good. They probably are, you know, but we did hear there was frustration from players in the immediate aftermath, kind of just wondering, like, okay, if it's not about us, you know, what are you talking about? Because it certainly seemed like there was a little punt of accountability there from Davey, and certainly more of a punt than we've really heard from him before.
Chelsea, what kind of job is he doing?
That's a great question. I don't know. You know, I think we, you know, by all sort of measures of a human being, he is a good person, a kind person who cares about the guys, and that does matter. What I don't know is if they are underachieving or overachieving relative to what they should be doing. I mean, they're underachieving relative to what Davey and Riz and others said they should be doing this year. But I don't, you know, we don't know who these guys are. We don't know who Robert Hassel should be. We don't know what Dylan Cruz, you know, should be. We know what they think they are. But, you know, with another manager, would this roster be in the same place? Maybe, maybe not. You know, it's so hard to say and has been hard to say for such a long time because you're not looking at guarantees in that lineup. You're looking at people who either have to get better and then the lineup will get better, or who are kind of there as placeholders. And so, you know, is Davey the problem? How many wins is he responsible for? I don't know. And I think that's part of why it's so hard to sort of pull the Nats out of this, because there's not one clear problem or one clear thing where you say, you know, Davey's really asleep on the job, because I don't think that's the takeaway from this year necessarily at all.
You know, it was just a week and a half ago, they were like two or three games below 500. They were scoring a bunch of runs, you know, against Arizona and I forget who else during that stretch. They were clearly more explosive from an offensive standpoint than they were this time last year. And now they're in the midst of an eight-game losing streak with three bad losses to Miami, a bad team. I mean, things change in sports. We understand this, but what were people thinking a week and a half ago?
No, I think everyone around the Nationals can agree that there was a world in which they would maybe contend for a wild card spot this year. And as of a week ago, that world still existed. It kind of still exists now. You know, if they make a big run, they're back in it. And all of that would be really good. But I think what people know around the team, and certainly everyone who watches them regularly, is that they're just not as sure a thing as they should be after this long of a rebuild. You know, they should be, we shouldn't be wondering who they are. You know, we shouldn't be kind of living week to week. This should be a team that can be consistent. And yeah, with young guys, you're going to have inconsistencies, but it just seems like they haven't taken the big leap. You know, you're not sure that they're going to be better this year than last year. And I think, frankly, you know, put in those terms, it's unacceptable given what, you know, Davey, Riz, and others said were the expectations for this year.
I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, prior to these comments out of, let's just say, frustration on Saturday, the default for most fans would be to blame ownership for not spending enough money, not giving Mike Rizzo enough resources. And, you know, it just seemed rarely did that trickle down to the manager, who, by the way, has a losing record as a manager. I mean, there is 2019 to stand on, obviously, a magical season that ended up in a World Series. But now we're talking about the manager and the manager's job security. Did that just change because he made these comments Saturday, or do you think there's still, it's still fair to start with ownership?
I think it's always fair to start with ownership. And I think with the Nationals, it's always fair to talk about Mike Rizzo and Davey in the context of what they've been given. I think it would be unfair not to, right? This is not, you know, the last time that they had, you know, that Davey managed a team that had kind of all its stars and wasn't trying to cut payroll, they won the World Series. Ever since then, you know, they've been trying to trim, and that has shown. But I don't think Davey was on the hot seat before this weekend. I don't know that he's on it now, but I will say that what he did was sort of bring to the surface something that we really hadn't seen. We didn't see anyone getting frustrated. You know, we hadn't seen anyone say, you know, okay, James Wood has been great, but, like, what the heck else is going on here? You know, what's the direction of this team? And he didn't say that, but he sort of revealed that, you know, he wishes some things were going different. And players being frustrated by those comments, you know, reveals that they're frustrated about something and that there's a disconnect there. And I think all of that existed. You know, these things don't come out of nowhere. I think, obviously, Davey had been frustrated for a little while. You know, we just kind of know from being around that there are guys who, you know, they wish would make better progress, and there are players who sometimes aren't sure kind of, you know, where Davey stands, and that exists in every clubhouse. But I think Davey kind of just called attention to his own frustrations and therefore kind of reminded everyone that, like, look, this should be probably going differently. You know, you're not frustrated when things are trending the right way. You know, an eight-game losing streak doesn't feel so bad when you kind of know that in the grand scheme of things, you're going the right direction. And I just don't think anyone there feels certain that they are anything more than they are right now, you know, without some significant change.
You know, without the 2019 World Series, I mean, the record is not good. They've finished basically in dead last in the National League 3 out of the last 5 years, fourth place the other 2 years. You know, in most organizations, he wouldn't be the manager right now, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, I don't know that that's necessarily, you know, conventional wisdom in that case might not necessarily be wisdom at all. You know, I think we've seen, you know, the Pirates and Rockies look pretty silly scapegoating their managers when the rosters they built are not good. And, you know, I think at times in the last 2 years, that would have been all it was if they had decided Dave Martinez was the problem, because he frankly didn't have anything to work with.
Right.
Now, I think there's some of this. I mean, James Wood is really, really good. He's Juan Soto part two, and it feels like it doesn't change the equation for them at all. You know, they feel like they're going to win the same number of games maybe as last year. They're just going to look better doing it. And I think that's where the problem comes in. If you look at that guy and say, okay, if everyone kind of comes along and CJ is coming along and James Wood's coming along and McKenzie's leading the league in strikeouts, this team should be winning, or at least closer to it than they are. And they're not. And so I think that's why you can start looking at Dave Martinez and say, okay, there's actual talent here. What's not clicking? And does that mean he's a problem? I don't think there's any one problem. So, but it definitely just kind of makes you look at things with a, I think, earned scrutiny.
All right, let's net it out on Davey here by just asking you, because they play Colorado the next 4 games. Colorado, for those of you who don't know, is not only the worst team in baseball, there's not a close second. They are 14-57 on the season. They are terrible. Is this a big series? Is he in jeopardy if they say, you know, were to lose 3 of 4? Could that be it by the end of the week or midweek?
You know, I don't know. I would say I think it feels bigger than any series we've had in quite some time for that reason. I think, you know, a bad showing here is going to continue a downward spiral that has escalated pretty quickly, I think. You know, I think those comments mattered in that they just called attention to their mediocrity, kind of. So I think I don't know how hot the seat is. I don't know how hot it should be, but I do know that if you're losing 3 or 4 to the Rockies after what they just did this weekend, that it's going to be closer than it's ever been to something changing, and probably should be at that point.
Is there an obvious replacement on the team somewhere?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Sometimes the solution,
problem, right?
Sometimes the solution, if it's difficult, sort of tells you where the answer is going to come, even if they lose 3 out of 4.
I think that's right. And I think the fact that you don't look around and say this guy would help in the manager's seat probably tells you a lot too, right? That,
yeah,
that there's just so much more going on, because a manager can't make that roster better. You know, he can't hasten the development of Hassel and Cruz and guys that, you know, they probably need to be better sooner if they're going to win this year. You know, there's other problems. And one of them, the problem that will always be there, is that if they're not willing to spend on quality players, they are not going to win, because they are not built to do this internally. They're just not built to do it all internally. That was fine, you know, last time around, because they were able to go out and get pieces to supplement what they could do. But if they can't do that, I just don't think they're built to do it themselves. And that's, you know, that's a huge problem.
All right, let's switch subjects real quickly. Tell us about the calling up of Brady House, where he'll play, what they're expecting from him.
No, I think Brady House, it's time. You know, he'd had a really strong season in AAA. He's going to swing and miss a lot. That's always been the problem. So he'll kind of fit right in. That doesn't really scare them. He's got a lot of power from the right side. He's a really energetic and competitive guy. So I think that, you know, is only a positive thing. And I think he'll play as much third as his bat shows he can. I mean, they would love to hand him the position. I don't know if he'll be totally ready for that, but I think he'll get a shot, and, you know, maybe he'll be kind of an injection of life, because, you know, he is a reminder that there are other good young players here. And, you know, if they can just get everybody in the same direction, you know, there's talent to be had there. There's talent to be made something of.
Another first-round pick has pitched well recently. Will Cade Cavalli find his way to the bigs soon?
I think so. They've always been, you know, pretty clear with him, you know, even to the point of joking around in spring training that they're going to play it slow. they're not going to let him come back until, you know, midway through the summer so that he doesn't have to handle a ton of innings coming off injury. So I think it was a plan to kind of get to June or July and then bring him back. I think everyone in the organization still has faith that he's, you know, somebody that's going to contribute to the rotation. And, you know, that's something else to look forward to there. That guy coming back, if he's as good as they thought he once was, then, you know, that'll help a lot too.
Is Mackenzie Gore a legitimate Cy Young candidate in the National League?
He's definitely close. I think he will get votes. I don't know if he can keep up with some of the bigger guys out there, although it's been, you know, a little bit of an inconsistent season with some of the guys at the top. But, you know, leading the league in strikeouts is no joke. I mean, he's really good. Players think he's really good after they face him. I just think he needs to be a little more dominant, maybe, you know, hold teams down a little bit more than he does to kind of jump into that conversation seriously. But I also might be harder on him than people who are voting and don't see every start and analyze it, you know, to the minute like we do.
Well, Skeens is a heavy favorite right now, but Mackenzie Gore's in the mix of, like, you know, fifth or sixth among odds right now. But he, as you mentioned, he leads not just the National League, but he leads all big leaguers in strikeouts with 119. Last one. Do Gore, Wood, and C.J. Abrams all become All-Stars this year? All three?
I think they should. You know, I don't know how, you know, Wood and Gore aren't. I think Abrams might be on the bubble, but probably should make it again. So, you know, I think all three should be All-Stars. Whether they will be or not is, you know, often a more complicated process than that.
Thanks for doing this. Hope you're well. Good to catch up. Thanks, Chelsea.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Chelsea Janes from my podcast yesterday. Again, the Nats lost last night to Colorado. Brady House, by the way, last night in his debut, 0-for-3 with a walk and a strikeout. The Nats and the Rockies again tonight. This will be a very interesting week if the Nats can't figure out a way to get healthy against the Colorado Rockies. And last night, they lost. That's 9 in a row. Now, you turn that into 10 in a row, 11 in a row with, you know, the last 5 or 6 coming against the Marlins and the Rockies. I would expect, just based on optics, a change. We'll see. All right. When we come back, the NBA draft is a week from tomorrow night. The Wizards have 2 picks, and the latest ESPN mock draft has them selecting a player that I really hope they don't select. More on that next.
All right, the Oklahoma City Thunder took a 3-2 lead in the NBA Finals last night by a score of 120-109. The Pacers cut the lead to 2 points in the fourth quarter, and it was all OKC from there with a 21-8 run to close out the game. Jalen Williams put up 40 points on 56% shooting. The Stanley Cup Final is tonight, and the Cup is in the building. The Panthers are coming home with a chance to close out the Edmonton Oilers tonight at 8 p.m. on TNT. And the Nats, they fall to the Rockies after entering the ninth with a 4-3 lead. Kyle Finnegan gives up his first home run of the season to tie the game. Then Mickey Maniak hits the go-ahead home run. Kyle Finnegan's second given up of the year. The Nats fall 6-4 and extend their losing streak to 9 games. They'll continue their series versus the Rockies tonight. First pitch is at 6:45. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:15 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10-1 and Craig Hoffman from 4-7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports, and that is what's trending.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So a week from tomorrow night, the NBA draft takes place. The NBA Finals will be over either Thursday night or Sunday night. And the Wizards have to draft well. I mean, their only chance of being a contender down the road is to use all of these draft choices that are coming, you know, fast and furious by way of trade and, by the way, positioning in the draft. They got very unlucky, obviously, in the lottery this year, dropping all the way to sixth, even though they had the second worst record in the NBA. That's a tough break. But they got to make it pay off. In this morning's NBA section at ESPN.com, they have the latest mock draft from Jonathan Giovanni and Jeremy Wu. And they've got the Wizards at number six, selecting Ace Bailey from Rutgers. I think this would be a massive mistake. I'll admit going into this that we don't know anything. These kids are so young. You know, Bailey played 1 year at Rutgers with Dylan Harper, both as freshmen. You know, they've essentially for about a year and a half been predicted to be the number two and number three picks in the NBA draft. Dylan Harper most likely will be the number two pick after Cooper Flagg. Bailey, though, drops to six in this latest mock draft. And they've got Ace Bailey going to the Wizards. Ace Bailey is 6'7", 6'8", super skin, big wingspan, can play a lot of different positions, can play, you know, small forward, can play actually in the backcourt if you really needed it. I watched him a bunch this year in the Big Ten. Playing for Rutgers. Rutgers was supposed to be a lot better than they turned out to be before the season started, relying on these two freshmen. The game's now an older game, college basketball is, you know, with all of the transfers and teams getting older, and you see older teams tend to win a little bit more. Rutgers was not ready for prime time, certainly not the Big Ten. They had a rough season. There was a game in which Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper came to College Park and played Maryland. This was in early February. The Terps had a really good team this year, no doubt about it. And they beat Rutgers 90-81. In the game, Derek Queen emasculated Ace Bailey, two freshman players. It was a beatdown. Now, what we found out after the game is that Ace Bailey apparently was sick. He tapped out in the game, went to the bench, didn't come back into the game, ended up with 4 points on 2 of 4 from the field. Derek Queen had one of the better games he had all season long, 29 points, 15 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, a block shot. He was dominant. In his matchup with Ace Bailey. It wasn't matched up specifically with him the entire time, but Ace Bailey, I remember making a mental note. This guy's not the number two pick in the draft. You don't tap out of a game like this. The game was competitive. It was, you know, Maryland didn't pull away by a big margin. In that game, Dylan Harper was firing away. Ace Bailey went to the bench with the sniffles. And I made a mental note. I don't want him. I don't want a guy that's capable of doing that. Now, there were games this year in which he was outstanding. He had a game, I think it was against Northwestern at some point this year. I think he had 39. I'm looking it up right now in his game log. Yeah, January 29th at Northwestern, he had 37. He was 13 of 25 for 8 from behind the three-point line. He also had a 30-point game against Penn State. Look, he beat up on some teams that didn't have bigger guys. He had a 39-point game early in the season at Indiana. I did not see that one. But the lasting impression of what he did at Maryland bothered me. And now you've got some interesting write-ups about Ace Bailey. This is the write-up, ESPN.com. Bailey's pre-draft workout strategy has perplexed some observers, as he is yet to conduct a single known workout to date, having declined invitations from several teams within his draft range. Sources say Bailey's camp has informed interested teams that they believe he is a top three player in the draft, but also seeks a clear pathway to stardom perhaps feeling comfortable that a team will trade up to get him at number three or number four should he drop. Some teams question whether Bailey has received assurances of being selected by a team currently outside of the top five to a situation deemed more advantageous from a geographic and playing time perspective. That might mean the Wizards. Bailey is scheduled to conduct a workout with the 76ers later this week, but it's unclear if he plans to visit any other teams at this stage. Should the Sixers pass on him, he could very well slide to number six or number seven, two teams in Washington and New Orleans that are said to be highly intrigued with the 18-year-old's talent, and both situations in which there would be plenty of minutes to be had. You don't know anything about these 18-year-olds. I get it. You know, they mature physically and mentally sometimes 4 or 5 years after they are drafted. He may turn out to be a great player. That's just a lasting image. And Derek Queen in that game, Derek Queen, they've got going 12 to Chicago. I would certainly consider taking Derek Queen at six. He's a basketball player. He is so skilled. I think he's the most skilled big guy in the entire class. I think he'll be a great pick and roll, a great pick and pop guy, a great passer from the high post, from the low post, a great rebounder. I would take a guy like Derek Queen and roll the dice with him. They also have two other picks in this draft. They have number 18 in the draft. Mock draft has him selecting Asen Newell from Georgia. They also have number 40 in the draft, and this mock draft has them taking the star of the Auburn team that made it deep into the tournament, Jani Broome. Three swings at it next week, Wednesday and Thursday, for the Wizards to try to land on a player that I don't think they've landed on yet through these last couple of drafts. I don't think that Sar, Carrington, George, at this point are the potential answers in terms of, a superstar player. Time will tell. It's early. That's it for today. Back tomorrow. Chris is next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.